This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. Honesty, integrity, hard work. It's the way you live and the way we bank. Bank of Colorado has been a family-owned, community-focused bank for generations and will be here for generations to come. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
This is Cody Tucker with 7220sports.com, and you're listening to The Hull Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back into The Hull Show, powered by Chevron. Joining me now on the First Advantage Hotline, the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, both football and men's basketball team, Mark Johnson. And Mark, I have some questions. Michael and I, my producer and I, were getting into a little bit of an argument. And I'm, of course, you know, nice and good about it. And Michael's just rude and mean about it. So I wanted you to weigh in, being a Big 12 broadcaster. And it's basically we're talking college football playoffs. And I, for one, had a lot of fun with the whole Boise State thing last year. Ultimately, they get in. They lose to Penn State. Wasn't necessarily a major blowout. But now we're talking about Navy, James Madison, Tulane. Who knows? Do you like the fact that a school like those are essentially taking away a playoff spot from, I don't know, Vanderbilt's having a really good year, teams like that? Because I'm on the side where I kind of enjoy having a seat at the table, maybe a small seat, for these lesser perceived schools.
Well, it all depends on what we're talking about here. Are we talking about guaranteeing them a spot?
Because
then I don't think it's a good idea.
Interesting.
And I say that only because, okay, what if it's a year where you don't have... You know, Boise was very, very good last year, right? Fully understood why they were there. So I'm okay with reserving them a spot as long as somebody is worthy of that position, right? And so that's where I think you got to be careful here. Just saying, yes, we're going to give you a spot no matter what. We're going to save a seat for a group of five school as long as, whoever finishes the top school in that group, if you will. Then you get into some dicey areas. You got to make sure it's a very good football team. And so that's how I differentiate a little bit.
And I get it. Even with Michael, his arguments were a lot. He used a lot more Star Trek references and things like that, Mark. But
that's interesting. I'm not even sure how you tie Star Trek into that, but sure, why not?
He can find if there's a way he can make it. I understand, even with Michael over there, I understand everything, because at the end of the day, you are cutting out a better football team to make up for, in most cases, at least, certainly this year, you are cutting out a better football team who's had a harder schedule, who's won harder games, lost closer hard games, than a team like a Navy or whatnot. Right. I do get that side of it. I don't know. There's just that part of me that, and maybe this is coming from me following Mount West schools, just knowing that there is that light at the end of the tunnel. Because I just don't care about the random bowl games. I never really have, and I like the fact that you can get to one, but once you're in one, I'm going to be hard-pressed to even watch those games if they don't mean anything in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Being a football fan, I'll just dial up a random bowl game just to watch football, you know, and so I like the game of football, so I'll watch them. But, you know, if you've got somebody that's 11-1 from the group of five, then you go, okay, they deserve a seat at the table here. If we're talking about... You know, certainly in a 9-3 team. Okay, now we got a problem. If you got a 2-loss team, depending on who those losses are, too, you can make an argument for a team like that. But you've got to be careful. This should be, and it's not, because the broader conversation here is the way they're going to shove SEC teams down our throat. Because I guarantee you, by the time this whole thing settles here, just a couple of weeks, and they nail down the schools that are going to be in there, there's going to be one or two we're all going to go, wait a minute, wait. Just because they're in the SEC does not make them a playoff team. And so, we've kind of lost the objectiveness in this process to begin with. And so there that flies in the face of what the ultimate objective should be in this, which should be, you find me the top football teams in America by whatever metric we want to measure, and then you put them in regardless of where they live during the season, whether they're in a group of five or SEC or Big Ten or whomever. And so, But then again, I realize we live in a world of politics. We live in a world of money. We live in a world where television networks and shoe companies have far too much input in what happens on the field, not just what happens in the business side of things. And so, you know, it's an imperfect system, and we're going to have to live with it.
Either way you slice it, we're always going to get into this point where, because back when it was, hey, we're doing the, you know, we're just picking the two teams going to the championship, or even just picking the champion, we would debate, okay, who are the 3, 4, 5, 6 left out? We're going to be mad at that. Then when they added 4, it was like, okay, what about the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Now that we're at 12, it's going to be, hey, what about the other 6, 7 that are left? We're just going to keep going until ultimately we get to, you know, just two monster conferences, and they've got 60 teams on each side. You and I have talked about that a lot.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, the thing about it is I do think the more teams you add, the more controversy you have. Because, you know, let's be real honest about it. When it was just choosing two teams to go in there, really, how many teams are legitimately in that conversation? 4, maybe?
Right,
maybe.
Yeah.
Right? When you get the 4, you can make an argument for a couple of more beyond that. When you're getting down into 12, now all of a sudden you're getting into more gray area. You know, ultimately they talk about going to 16. Now you're really going to get in the gray area. And so, you know, just expanding this thing because of the fact you've got 137 Division I teams, you're going to have, a lot of argument in terms of who should be in there because you get very subjective down there. And that's why, you know, there's pros and cons to the expansion of what we've done in college football in terms of the playoffs. But, you know, I think it's a good thing when they get the 16. I've always said when you get the 16 teams, and somewhat when you're at 12, if you're number 17 or number 18, you know, I'm sorry you didn't make it. That's too bad, right?
Yeah.
Right? Because now there are teams in that top. Because let's be real honest about it. In college football, every year, five teams maybe that you look at and say, you know what, I think they're really, truly a national championship contender. Because remember, in football, you don't see the upsets like you do in basketball. It's a totally different game, and it's a much, much tougher to have major upsets consistently throughout the course of a tournament. It may happen on a given Saturday, but generally it's not going to happen. If you're the 16th-seeded team in a 16-team playoff, chances of you winning the championship, I think, in football, are slim and none. Where in basketball, that, you know, you can see that kind of thing if you took 16 teams. So it's just a different game. And so anyway, that's my 2 cents.
No, I do understand it. I really do. And it's probably, when we're talking about just the better teams that are in the higher caliber of game, more likely than not, you are going to go that route. But I digress. Mark Johnson, the voice of the Colorado Buffs, joining me. Rick George, Mark, you and I have talked about Rick George a lot on the show, and you even talked to us. Like, it's a matter of time. You know, there was an end date, not exactly a specified end date throughout our conversations, but we knew it was coming. I guess I always just thought he might ride it out for as long as Coach Prime was there. But he decided, hey, I'm gonna step down, still be involved, but as far as being the athletic director, those days are coming to an end soon.
I knew this was coming here at some point. A couple of weeks ago, I was kind of tipped off that, in maybe 2 weeks or so, Rick's going to make a major announcement. And so I knew it was coming. I knew that you know, this summer, from a contractual standpoint, there was an important date within the agreement he had with the university that was going to prompt some sort of announcement. And so this was not shocking to me in any way, shape, or form. Rick and I have had many of these conversations in his office over the last couple of years and talked about how long do you want to do this and those kind of things. And so it wasn't shocking. And immediately I got inundated with the, this has got to mean that Coach Prime. No, this has nothing to do with Coach Prime. This was talked about long before. I don't know if you watched, you're probably on the air, but Prime just had his press conference, his weekly press conference, and talked about that and said, listen, A had nothing to do with B here. And the good news is, in Rick's role that he's going to have moving forward, he's leaving the job, or the position, I should say, but not the job, if that makes sense. And so he's going to be around the, you know, athletic director emeritus, an advisor to the chancellor, and that when they go through the process, and I don't know if Prime let something out of the bag here or not, he said the process is already underway. That has officially not been announced. And so he said that today. I'm like, well, okay. But you know the way these things work. When you get a position of that magnitude that opens up, there are immediate phone calls taking place, one direction or another, and agents are involved and all that sort of thing. And so not surprising that activities have already begun. Rick knows this business very well. He's been one of the top athletic directors in the country now for a long number of years on many major committees and knows a lot of people. He's been in Major League Baseball and the PGA and involved in the television stuff. So Rick's fingerprints are going to be on this from an advisory standpoint. That I guarantee you. And so knowing Rick as I do, I'm very confident about the direction of where it all goes and what it's going to look like here moving forward.
How would you kind of, you know, briefly, Mark, just kind of summarize Rick's career as the athletic director for CU? Because there's certainly been some ups and downs, some pretty major ups just recently, though, with Moot getting to the Big 12, hiring Coach Prime and doing all those things. There's been, I mean, just recently, it's been pretty good. But how would you kind of summarize the whole body of work for him?
Well, I think it's very positive. And I say, look, and listen, when you're in that kind of position, it's like being a politician or something, right? You're never going to please everybody. It's a very tough job. But overall, the highs have been higher than the lows have been low with Rick. I mean, think about what he did when he first got here. You know, it was a joke when Rick got here 13 years ago, talking about, you know, what has turned out to be the Champion Center and new facilities. That had been talked about forever. And nobody had even come close, not just to finishing the project. I'm talking about not even kind of taking the first step towards it. Rick gets here with about 18 months or so. The Champion Center is sitting there in the northeast corner of the football stadium, a Folsom Field. The indoor practice facility, rather. I mean, so that in and of itself, $150, $160 million project, whatever it ended up being, it was an enormous undertaking and an enormous feather in the cap of Rick George. And so that kind of set the foundation for what Rick has done. I think you look at that, you look at what he's done fundraising-wise, you look at the transition to the Big 12, you look at the hiring of J.R. Payne, he's been a very successful hire, one of your major sports. What he has done here leading the athletic department through, you know, the fog of this new world we're in, where nobody knew where it was going, what it was going to look like, how it was going to work through NIL and the transfer portal. Rick has been one of the guys in the forefront of that. And then, of course, you got the hiring of Coach Prime and what that meant from an institutional standpoint with all the eyeballs on the University of Colorado. So, you know, has it been perfect? Did he hit 1,000? No, and no one's going to. But the highs have been much higher than the lows have ever been low. And so I give Rick very good marks for what he's done as the AD at CU.
Mark, one of the things that I really like, too, and again, I think two things can be true. I've been critical of Tad Boyle, and I've also said you're not going to find anybody better. I think it's fair. You can be critical of Bo Nix on Sunday and say, no, I don't want a different quarterback. I actually really like the fact that Rick George did stay the course with Tad Boyle over these years when there was certainly a lot of pressure to look what's happening in college basketball and football. And this isn't new, but we're in this day and age where we're changing coaches every 3 years. So I do kind of I credit him for staying the course with Tad. And, hey, right now they're 4-0.
Well, yeah, but you think about that. And so Tad didn't hire Rick didn't hire
sure,
Tad.
That was
Mike Bone. And, but still, there's an old coaching friend of mine. I always used to say when a new athletic director comes in, the football and basketball coach is going to be changed very soon.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They want their people on board. But he inherits Tad Boyle, and that pressure from the outside, if Rick would have made that move, it would have been one of the most illogical moves that I would have seen in college athletics. Because, you know, I tell people all the time, this is the golden era of Colorado basketball right now in the history of this program. And what Tad has done with less than virtually anybody he's competing with, this is what fans don't quite understand. Tad Boyle is bringing a knife to a gunfight every single night. I'll give you a prime example. Last Friday, they played Providence. The roster being paid, as they are now in college athletics, Providence's roster is making over three times what Colorado's roster is making.
Wow.
He's going to face a Kansas team, a Texas Tech team, a Iowa State team this year that are going to be making three to four times more, that they're paying that roster three to four times more than what Tad Boyle is paying his roster this year.
Wow.
And fans don't understand that. And it didn't just start when we're talking about college, the NIL and that kind of thing. This has been going on. This man has made chicken salad out of chicken crap, as they say, right? Over the course of, compared to what everybody else has got in terms of kind of the money pool that they're dealing with. And so even to make that change would have been just, I mean, insane. And fans don't understand that. And when I try and explain it to them, they still don't believe me, and they still complain about it. But it's an amazing deal considering that dude, all he does is virtually every year win you 20 games, finish in the top half of his conference, and go to the postseason, go to the NCAA half the time, and still no one's happy. It's one of the darndest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, again, and you and I have had these long conversations about Tad. I'm always going to be a fan, and I'm always going to say, if you were to say, okay, we're going to fire him and try to go get anybody else, I think Tad's always been the right guy for the job. I would love to see this team get to the point where they're getting out of that first weekend. It is what it is. But when everything you line out compared to what he's dealing with on a yearly basis, it is difficult. And those are for all those reasons. That's why I say, no, I'm never saying this. I think it's Tad Boyle's job for as long as he wants it to be. So I've always kind of been on that side.
Let me tell you this. When those fans come to me and they talk to me about that, and I look at them and say, you know, on Friday night, the Providence Friars came in here. One of the top programs in college basketball in its history. There were 6,500 fans there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny how when we get in these conversations and fans come to me and they say this, I say, okay, you're at every single game all season long, aren't you? Well, no, I rarely go. Okay, well, then don't talk about it then. You know, because I do know this. When I go to Texas Tech, when I go to Kansas, when I go to Iowa State, when I go to the best basketball, Arizona, those places are sold out every single night. So we speak out of both sides of our mouth. We want a championship-level team, but we don't want a championship-level atmosphere.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because if you are, you know, the fan base especially, if the fan base is like, you know, hey, we got to get rid of this guy, he's not good. Yeah. If you're not supporting the success that you have now, then what makes whoever the athletic director is at the time, what makes that athletic director so confident that, hey, let's blow this guy out and let's bring in a different stud name? Oh, it's going to be the same results.
I've told you, when I was at Syracuse, it didn't matter if they were playing Georgetown or if they were playing, SUNY Albany, right? Some directional school. 17,000 people were in the stands.
Yeah.
And, you know, so Friday night we play a very good Providence team. I guess it was closer to 8,000 by the time it was all said and done, I think, when they got there. But still, that's 3,000 below your sellout. And last night was Alabama State, and there was about 5,500 people there. And so that's my point. If you truly want that, well, then this is a team effort. You know, Kenny Dillingham, I saw just yesterday down in Arizona State, was at some event talking about that concept. We want a championship-level program. The coach should do it. The players should do it. But we are, as the supporters of the team, we're not doing our part. Well, okay, let's all do it then. If we're all in this thing together, let's go ahead and do it. You want a championship team, want to cheer for a championship team, then be a championship fan. And I think that's an important mindset that everyone has to have.
Yeah, no, I hear you, Mark, and I've always appreciated these conversations because, again, at the end of the day, you and I are both, you especially have a great relationship with Tad, but I'm a big fan. That was part of a good thing about what Rick George has done, too, on top of quite a few, as you listed earlier. Mark, always appreciate it, my friend. And we're talking the trifecta with the Avs, Nuggets, Broncos, but the teams that I talk about on this show as far as college basketball, they're all undefeated right now. So that's a pretty exciting thing, too. Yeah.
Man, oh, man. Okay. I'm looking forward to that game, you know, because we played the Bears and the Rams this year.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm looking forward to that game before Collins coming up here next month.
I am too, Mark. I'm looking forward to it all, my friend. Okay, let's reach out. Let's try to catch up at our old spot. And I've only been there with you once, so it's not really our old spot. But in Severance, it's like 5 minutes away from me. So let's go to Bruce's bar.
We need to do it again. Let's do it, man.
All right, my man. Appreciate you. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, bud. Bye.
I like that I pretend that Mark and I are, like, closer than we are. Like, let's go to our old spot. We literally went there once. But it was amazing. It was awesome. It was a great time.
Mark and I are closer than you and he.
Just because, well, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to throw you under the bus and say you're making a Star Trek reference, but every time you talk, it's all I hear. So to be fair, I mean, you could be saying the most well-thought-out sports take in the world, and it's all I hear is something about Elixir or whatever. I'm sorry. That's my bad.
So basically, you heard absolutely none of my incredibly truthful argument, which, by the way, I believe he agreed with me.
He agrees with you, but he's in the Big 12, so of course he agrees with you. I actually don't disagree with your reasoning. I'm just saying that I like the idea of having a seat at the table.
I believe in merit.
Well, the Broncos got an 8-8, so are you willing to trade that in and give it up, their playoff win over the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Hypocritically, no, but only because it was the Broncos. Only, I'll admit it out loud. I only like it when my team benefits.
So, and I only like it when teams that the conferences that I care about benefit from it. So I'm right too.
Yeah, like if the Huskies benefited from it, I'd be like, yes.
Right. But, at least you're honest. At least you're honest about it. 12:43 the time, Mike. We blew the clock again. Your fault. Let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. Honesty, integrity, hard work. It's the way you live and the way we bank. Bank of Colorado has been a family-owned, community-focused bank for generations and will be here for generations to come. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.